empowering thing is being able to carve your own path and having that freedom and liberty to, if you reframe it in that way, I think gives you such a positive attitude and gratitude towards that situation.
On today's episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Patrick Gallagher, the video coordinator at the University of San Diego. Patrick's journey is a great example of steady growth within a program, working his way up from student manager to staff assistant, graduate assistant, and now into his current role as the VC. He's gained a strong understanding of the day-to-day details that keep a Division I program running smoothly. In this episode, we discuss how he initially landed the student manager role at San Diego and advice for breaking in at your own school. What separated the student managers who earned more responsibility from those who stayed in the background, and how he tailors film breakdown differently for players versus coaches. Please welcome to the podcast, Patrick Gallagher. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. Coaches and everyone tuning in, thanks for joining with another episode of the Rising Coaches podcast. Your hosts, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. Today, we're fortunate to be able to sit down with the video coordinator over at the USD, University of San Diego, Coach Pat Gallagher. Coach, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Go Toreros.
Appreciate you, PG.
Glad to be here. Thanks, Doug and Alan. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah. No, thank you, brother.
No, and I know we said it before too, but one, you have, believe it or not, I know a lot of people who are in like the kind of, I don't want to say beginning stages, because I'm still technically in the beginning stages of learning about the coaching, but just more or less like starting your coaching career. A lot of people are like, oh yeah, I don't really have much I can share. It's like, you have a lot more information you can share that a lot more people can resonate with that you may or may not believe, because there's a lot of people who would kill to be able to be into a role that you're in, an opportunity that you're in. So I'm sure there's going to be a lot of, for people who are interested in starting into the program or starting into the industry and then rising in one program, this is a perfect opportunity for them to listen, and even about the video coordinator side. And you have one of the best role models you can physically have sitting right there, because he's helped me out a lot, but I'm sure he's helped you in the program a lot now. But yeah.
Oh, very, very blessed, to say the least, to have Coach Major, Coach Alan Major, working aside alongside him this year. Learned a lot, have consumed a lot of trail mix as well. So hoping into this new year, continue that consumption. But yeah, here on the West Coast, San Diego, born and raised in California in the Bay Area, Pleasanton. Started out, came to USD with really an uncertainty of what I wanted to do with my own career and where that would lend into. Initially thinking maybe working in basketball on the side and pursuing something else, but it became very crystal clear early on. I wanted to pursue basketball, get back into it. At the mid-major level at USD in the West Coast Conference, I just approached the coaching staff at the time, shared with them my interest to help and wanting to help the program to whatever capacity they needed, and just leaned into it right during COVID. I still remember having to wipe down all the basketballs with Clorox 3 times a day and keep all the chairs 6 feet apart and have to wear a face mask along with a face shield and rubber gloves while rebounding for guys with the fog covering my mask, running 1 mile a minute, but also just enjoying all of that experience in and of itself. Being persistent about getting your foot in the door. I think sometimes speaking to the managers I've known in the past, or people that wanted to be managers but didn't work out, trying to work for their university, is maybe they reached out once and they let that simmer and sit. You really want to go for it, you have to be adamant about it. That could be being bold about stepping into the office of the university. Maybe this sounds uncomfortable for some people, but sending emails every single day. I think fortunately for me at USD, they were definitely a little more desperate for managers, so it didn't take too much effort to get my foot in the door. And then once I was there, just treating my job like It's the ultimate job, and it has a role, like every role, a part of the whole enterprise, understanding that my part has significance and embracing that and loving that. And I think care factor is a huge component to being a great manager, because you have the opportunity to spread a positive energy alongside of your due diligence with your responsibilities. And then just stacking those days and continue to implement yourself within the team and get to know the coaches and get to know the players, and just having a genuine curiosity and just being a sponge and listening and trying more so to work hard and be seen rather than be heard, and to focus on that mindset on a continuous basis made it a very fruitful experience once I was a student manager. And then when Coach Steve Lavin and the coaching staff came during my senior year, I had the opportunity to join the coaching staff after I graduated and becoming a GA, same mindset, nothing's too little, nothing's too big in terms of responsibility, expecting nothing but appreciating everything that comes with the journey. And then again, same thing with care factor, just embracing every responsibility. And at the mid-major level, it depends on kind of the resourcing and the support of the school with the basketball program. But USD is a beautiful campus and has a tremendous academic experience and a wonderful fine city. But don't get it fooled that USD men's basketball still is a very gritty blue collar kind of operation where you're not always given the resources right away. And so having to do a lot of little things, whether that's setting up film, even when I was a manager, doing scouting reports since I was a GA, could be wiping sweat off the floor, fetching for waters, hunting down shoes, even pairs of underwear at halftime, whatever roles it is, just being so excited for it because you got to be a part of the team and trying your best to do your role to help the brand enterprise and keep that in perspective is super important. All of that has led to being a video coordinator with the staff, and I've been very fortunate to work alongside a lot of amazing coaches that really love the game. They're very detailed, process-oriented. They think very thoroughly, and just having them to be so approachable has allowed me to ask questions and to interact with them, and then also continuing to build a relationship with the coaching staff and the players and the university in totality has been a tremendous start to my young career. I'm very grateful and very fortunate.
Yeah, no, you summed it up, man. And just in the couple months I've been there in San Diego, so you do the best with what you're given. And thankfully, we've been given a new home in terms of a brand new facility and practice courts, team room, weight room, athletic training room, film room, everything. So it's almost like a reboot program-wise in terms of the university and their commitment and pouring into basketball. But obviously, you played at a really good high school, Amador Valley, I believe, yes. And a very good high school program. Did you always know, or I guess, let me rephrase that, when did you get the itch about coaching? Was it something you thought about while you were still playing? And then it's when I get done playing, that's what I want to do. Did your high school coach nudge you at some point and say, hey, you might be a good coach someday, keep it in mind? Like, when did it first, that seed first get planted with you? Because that, you're obviously headed down that road now. There's no turning back. You're gonna be a coach full time, and it's coming in terms of being able to get out on the road and recruit, all that stuff. It's coming. But when did that seed first get planted with you?
It's probably, I look back on it, and fortunately, I think when a lot of your interests you pick up, they are shown to you at a younger age. And being playing a lot of different sports, very fortunate to have a lot of great coaches in youth sports. And not just in basketball, but in baseball. A couple of my greatest mentors and role models came from my basketball and baseball coaches playing those sports, soccer and football as well, all the way to high school. And they were elite coaches that coached at the varsity level, that coached me when I was a kid. Coach Tony Badalega, Coach Luis Osorio, Coach Adam Sachs. Those kind of coaches, I think, instilled values of leadership, and learning that at a young age, I learned the fundamental significance that has in sport. And then the other side of just teaching. My mother's a teacher, my sister's a teacher. And so teaching kind of runs in the family, and teaching and coaching are basically synonymous in terms of the art and the science within both of those roles. And the connection piece, the relationship piece, with the students, with the players, along with the whole team is something that always really excited me. Being a captain at a young age of in my high school teams definitely inspired the opportunities to take on a role and interest into coaching as well. And then stepping away from basketball for a little bit, the beginning of college, realizing what you miss and what you really want and desire, and doing some introspective thinking. Very fortunate to have that opportunity. It's a privilege to be able to pursue coaching, I think, because many people don't have always the choices to choose their profession, whether they have to pursue the family profession or they just don't have the opportunities or time on their hands to pursue, sacrifice their time and money to start out in a career. And so feeling a lot of support and very grateful to be able to lean into that throughout college and discover on my own in this internal drive and intrinsic motivation to want to pursue coaching and everything in between, even from rebounding and talking to the players, having one-on-one dialogues to the big picture of creating a scouting report and how is it going to help us and strengthen weaknesses and thinking thoroughly and asking questions about how we're going to tackle this certain situation, or even just checking in on the guys with academics or just working with the coaching staff or those informal conversations after practice or practice. All the in between, I knew very quickly this is something that I really love doing, and every day it's definitely a joy.
That's the number one thing, is enjoying what you do. If you don't enjoy it, but you said before too, is it's not necessarily for everybody. And I know you hinted at that. And that's the one thing that people got to learn. And I feel like everybody thinks, oh, I would love to be a coach early on, because they see the glitz, the glamour, all of the wearing a USD logo on your shirt, getting to go to the Final Four, show everybody that you're at a Division I program, all that fun stuff, right? But then they don't realize the travel, the time. I was talking with a parent this past weekend, just as I mentioned, you guys, I was in Cleveland for a shootout, and a parent comes over and starts talking about how their son was thinking about getting into coaching, and he backed out of it. He didn't want to do it. And then she goes, yeah, he just doesn't realize the amount of time that you had to put really truly into it. When it comes to recruiting, you got to be on the road. You got to be all doing all these different things. And how you said in the beginning, you got to do all wiping sweat off the ground and little things like that, depending on the level you're at, the caliber that you're at, like at Division III. Heck, we have assistants, and we got to be the ones who hand out water bottles to guys when we don't have our trainers with us. And so you got to do those little things. And no, they're not fun, but ultimately you have to do them to keep a well-oiled machine running. So it's good that you hit on a lot of that, because all the little things are a necessity, believe it or not, whether you want to do it or not. And that is, I learned, one of the hardest things to do, I feel, and please correct me if you think I'm wrong, but is being able to say, I don't want to do this. There's been a lot of times I didn't want to do something. I never said it, but I didn't want to do it. And you're just like, you take it head on, you do it well, and you walk away from it, right? You just, a lot of the times, wiping sweat off the ground. Who wants to do that? Nobody's like, I really want to wipe sweat off the ground for a living. But you got to do it. Washing the dirty clothes, same story.
But it's also, I think those moments too are, like when I was a manager and even early as a GA, like traveling to a random laundromat in the middle of nowhere at 6 a.m. and you're there and you just step back and you get really grateful because people need you and you're doing something that's exciting by your own will that you chose. And I think that's the most powerful thing you can feel as a person, empowering thing, is being able to carve your own path and having that freedom and liberty to do. If you reframe it in that way, I think gives you such a positive attitude and gratitude towards that situation. And also the stories too. I have a lot of funny stories that where things twisted left and you had to figure out a way to put the ship back on in the direction as a manager, whatever it takes to get the job done, super glue or Ubers and whatnot. But those are also fun stories, though, at the end of the day. And I like having conversations and meet other managers or GAs or people just trying to get out there and do the best they can. And they share those stories because it's a shared struggle that you go through. But you love it, though. You still love it because you get to the games and you're like, this is where I love being. There's no other place I'd rather be to compete with the guys and go out there and to do the best we can in these 2 hours to come home and grab a W. It's the best feeling in the world.
Yeah, for sure.
People notice that too. That's the one thing I will say, is like people around you, the players, the other coaches, people notice those little things that you're doing, that extra effort you're putting in. Not a lot of people will ever say, hey, I see the work you're doing. Depends on the coaches that you have and the people you have around you. Some people will, some may not, but people notice that stuff one way or the other. It gets noticed and does not go under the radar. That's one thing to make sure to note.
for sure.
But talking about just, I know you segued a little bit into the video coordinator role. So let's talk on that a little bit, because that is a role that is pivotal for not only people who were managers aspiring to be video coordinators, or obviously just assistant coaches, head coaches, because they all have to watch film too, right? Take us through, and I understand every day is a different day. Everything's changing on a drastic pace, but what does a typical day look like just in the essence of film breakdown, going over practice film, things like that? Just take us through a typical day that you have as a video coordinator.
A lot of it is contingent on the timing of the year. For example, in the summertime, knowing I was going to be in this position, a lot to do with preparation, building like scout, building windows, code windows to get ahead, building, having a format and how, what's going to be the routine once the season comes with scouting reports, also doing some side projects and working on clips and watching your own film. But in terms of right now, it's a lot of it's based on the opponent we're playing. And so working with Coach Major or working with Coach Billy, obviously watching their last several games or so, just to try to get a feel and then funnel it to a more specific understanding of what you want to show to the team. So it's really collaborative. I think I'm learning still to be more communicative and getting that early and learning, okay, what does Coach Lavin want, and what is the assistants want? And so being really, you know, using your ears to listen to know exactly the flow and the routine that the coaches want, and then being available at any time whenever a coach says, hey, can we have this clip? And then digging and finding, familiarizing yourself with all the softwares you use, whatever you use for your program, whether that's Synergy, or for us it's Synergy, and then using the different resources like KenPom or CVB Analytics, SportsCode, Eclipse, and then just trying to create and build whatever the project is to share with the coaching staff, which ends up sharing to the players, and then trying to transfer that information to the players as best as you can, so where they feel they have their own comprehension and they have their own understanding of what they're looking at. And that could be from a scan report situation, but that also can be from an individual perspective where you're clipping up practices or clipping up past games to show them individual clips. Or if a player asks me if they can see their own clips, having that resource very quickly. So getting adjusted to the software and like the physical school, the skills of sports code was a learning curve and stuff in and of itself. But over time and learning trial and errors, you build a routine and sustain that. But it definitely, not to reiterate what you said, Doug, but it really is dependent on the timing of season two. If you have a whole week in between versus one day in between a game, and what's feasible and what's necessary. But at the end of the day, got to get it done, whether it's 3 p.m. or 3 a.m., whatever the time constraint is, got to have it done so we can sustain that routine. And so we're all keeping that same flow as a whole organization, including the video component.
That sense of urgency is great. It's huge. Go ahead, yeah. Mitch.
No, I think one thing that PG does a great job of, and when this pod drops, I think people can steal a cheat code from him, is when you do things that are player driven and efficiency driven, typically that gives you a great mode to operate with. And one of the things we're trying to do here, and with PG and I collaborating with film and Coach Billy, our other assistant who focuses a little bit more on offensive stuff, is that you really try to make it player driven. What's the best thing that's going to help the guys the best in this particular moment, or for this particular game, or for this particular film session, or for this particular whatever it is? And if you keep that in mind, people that are in PG spot or that aspire to be, that's such a big deal. And that usually gives you great direction as far as what you want to do. And because we can all do things to make ourselves feel better, the ultimate thing is player retention. And what are they going to be able to, and some guys can handle steak, some guys can handle chicken nuggets. So you have a gap from one, you have a spectrum from on any given team. You have a spectrum of guys that are on one end of that spectrum or the other, and then everything in between. So what's the best meal that's digestible? But when you make things player-driven and player-focused, you can't go wrong. That's something that PG does a great job of. And people listening to this, again, when it drops, that want to aspire to be in the VC role or as you progress in your coaching career, try to keep things player driven in terms of your focus.
And off of that too, watching film, you definitely have to break down. We'll say you have, on a normal basis, I'm assuming or guessing here that you probably have 2 to 3 days to show film before you go into that next game, right? So now, and that's on a probably average basis. Obviously, there's hit or miss, different opportunities or longer times, shorter times, and so on. But on average, probably about 2 to 3 days to show film. Out of those, usually most coaches get all of that done way in advance, but you don't show it to the players. You just keep it to yourselves. And then I guess where I'm going into this off of what you were saying too is, how do you differentiate what the players versus the coaches see? Because when you're doing film, like, you have to break down, I'm just going to pick a number. Like, we usually have maybe 60 to 70 clips. They're all short snippets, and we show everybody probably like a 15-minute overall film session, maybe 20, 25. But short and sweet, to the point. But then if you look from what the coaches have, we have a completely different list. We have all the sideline out of bounds, every baseline out of bounds, all of the plays, all of those things, but we don't show them all. So how do you really differentiate what's good for the coaches to see versus what you should show the players?
I think it's along the same thought process that you have, is showing them the meat and potatoes, giving them more of what we do with Coach Major, which is a great idea. We do like a personality where we're a couple days out showing the personality through several slides of what are the headlines that really make up this opponent that we're playing. So to give them a feel and understanding, because you're trying to simulate in practice when you're preparing what they're going to expect, but it's not going to be 100% in that simulation. And so just trying to give different means, diversifying means of how they can understand the players, which is creating a little personality slide and having some conversation about it, and then also sharing on their personnel and having a write-up on them, which is a different means, and then walking through it on the court, 100% speed versus like a walkthrough speed versus a scout team versus each other, and just having a lot of communication within that as well, having side-off conversations. Those are what are, I think, are beneficial to the players. And then from a coaching staff perspective, it really is dependent on what the head coach, I think, wants, and having an eye of what they like to have. And so, like, for Coach Lav, he really likes having a box score, a cumulative box score, and also the box scores from their last games to get an idea. And then he also likes the headlines, too, to just give an idea, because you don't want to overwhelm the players. I mean, if you're sharing a bunch of little snippet details, the reality is not all that's going to be understood. But if you're reframing, reiterating, repeating kind of these certain headlines of this certain attack of a team. This team loves to play slow. They play through the paint. They play through these two bigs. Now they can have an understanding, a short list menu to expect, rather than like a Red Robin or a Chili's menu where there's a million things and now they're overloaded with information that really doesn't help them feel understanding of, or gauging the understanding of what they're going to feel in the game. And then also as a player, when you're playing, you feel it out as well too. And basketball has a flow, it has a cadence, it has a rhythm to it. And we can talk as much as we want, but at the end of the day, the players need to have that feeling and comprehension within themselves to understand of how things are looking. You're just trying your best to prepare and to simulate a structure that gives them what they need and not at the perfect kind of balance.
Yeah. Yeah. And every game is different, every opponent's different, but the game itself is pretty consistent. So what you try to do is make the consistent parts of the game match that with what are the things that this particular opponent does. In a 30-second shot clock, it's 6, 18, and 6. So first 6 seconds, what are they doing? In the middle 18, what are they doing? And then in the last 6, what are they doing? So typically in that first 6, it's something transition related. In the middle 18, it's something flow and continuity related, or and mentality related, because what are they trying to do? Is it threes? Is it paint? Is it, you know, some teams have really good mid-range players, not as much anymore, but so there's a mentality in that middle 18 that they're trying to get to. And then the last 6 is usually something involving them blocking out or you blocking them out, and what's their mindset? Are they really coming, climbing your back with 4 people? Or are they coming with just 2 and sending 3 back? So 6-18-6 applies to every game. And so that kind of helps you maybe keep a message consistent. And anytime a message is consistent, it helps the guys look at the game in compartments and chunks instead of just saying, hey, let's just go win. Yeah, that sounds great. You know,
yeah,
maybe pom-pom-ish, but if they can see the game in compartments and chunks, mm-hmm. I think that really helps them as well.
That's a great point. Chunking is a great point. It's like when you're reading, and if you were given a piece of paper and you had a whole essay written on the piece of paper, but it was size 6 font and there's no margins, and you're asked to read it versus you clip that essay into 5 different pages, you chop it up into size 18 font, there's subtitles for every 2 paragraphs, there's certain words that are bolded and highlighted, it becomes a lot more digestible to read than just being thrown everything at once. And so I think the chunking method is super effective when it comes to understanding and learning before a game.
Yeah, and part of it is understanding how do players process information these days, mm-hmm. right? So if a guy's holding his phone, he's going to look at anywhere from 20 to 30 videos in a 15-minute period. That's chunks. Those are chunks. Mm-hmm. That's if he's on the days of actually talking to somebody on the phone for 30 minutes.
It's gone.
Yeah, unless that's what you really want to do. It's not gone. But for this age bracket of 18 to now almost 25,
let me say getting somebody on the phone to be able to talk with them if you're calling a business is gone.
Right.
It's all automated at this point.
Yeah, chat bots and everything else. But yeah, exactly. But the idea of trying to give them information the way they process information. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think PG does a great job of that. And people that aspire to be in this position, just understand, you know, they don't always process information the way that we do. We have to try to look and see how they process it. And then can you make your deliveries somewhat aligned? You're not never going to be perfect, but you're trying to make your deliveries, you know, as much as you can align with what they can digest.
Yeah. Alignment is so important with how they consistency. If you're putting on a scout report, like this player drives once the spin to his right, shot fakes, and then on the clips, you show him driving to his left for a pull up or floating with his left hand, right? That doesn't have any alignment or consistency. That confuses players. Trying to layer that consistency is super important with them process. It just gives another opportunity for players to have a processing ability and to be able to implement that themselves.
My head coach, Chatham, actually just told me this not too long ago, because every coach that you work for obviously has a different tactic or tendency, the way they want things done, scouting reports, all that stuff. So now I have a new coach this year, and he gave me this piece of advice when it came to making scouts. And what it was, he goes, think about it when you were in college. You have a test in 2 days. What did you do? Did you go and read every single chapter? No, you probably didn't do that. You probably skimmed, read the highlights and the top things that you want to pick from each chapter and studied those as to what you thought would be beneficial, put it all on a page and studied that. He goes, think of a game like that. The game's the test. You got to go. You got to find the snippets or the highlights, exactly how you guys said, the headlines, the highlights, different things that you feel good, be able to use those and implement those. And then think, is this something that's beneficial? No, let's put this aside. You guys encompassed it in a great way, but that's just another way to think about it, because that was some great advice that he gave me, and that's what I've been using myself.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
No doubt.
But then there is a ton of, I guess, like another big question, and this is obviously dependent on the level and the caliber that you're at. Like KenPom, I know you mentioned it before. I have access to it. Just a friend was able to give me, but that's all Division I. So in a lot of those, that Synergy, CBV Analytics, I'm assuming most of those, well, at CBV, I don't know, but Synergy, like you got to pay for a lot of those. But is there anything that maybe as a manager or stepping into your video coordinator role, being in it now, like any software, any tools, anything that you feel would be good for people to learn how to use to get into any of those various roles that you've been in?
First, being very organized in general. Having an organizational skill in and of itself. So that goes beyond the actual physical skills, but more so just your own personal skill of being organized and being diligent and understanding that is going to be very crucial to you sustaining consistency. always bring your laptop charger wherever you go. I learned that the hard way. Get your cords right. So always have spare cords and whatnot. But if you want to learn those skills, sports code, it depends on the program. Only working for, at my time here at USD, we've used sports code in terms of editing and clipping, using that as our software. And I was fortunate enough to reach out to one of the directors of Huddle Sports Code, and he gave me a one-on-one in-depth tutorial. And so just tinkering with those skills, not knowing at all how it would work beforehand, you pick on things quickly. And then also little skills like understanding Google Slides or PowerPoint, or just understanding shortcuts on a computer, like how to get certain shortcuts to make time efficiency work well. All those things, just being really understanding of the computer and the laptop skills, it's going to help you save a lot of time in of itself. But if you can get, if you know someone have any connections to sports code and can just tinker with it, play around with it, trial and error, I think that's the best means to building that skill and confidence within the softwares. So then you feel really prepared. And then also having that communication with the coach or the coaches you work for and work with, just to have an idea of what they're looking for. But the first thing is really you have to be organized as an individual, and because it's going to help with your own consistency, being able to keep things in folders and archive things. And it's like setting up a table. You got to set up your laptop so things are clean. It's like when you leave your house, you want to clean your house before you go and leave. And so the same thing with your computer, keeping it clean. Don't got to wipe the pizza grease off your laptop. Just keeping things organized. It all compounds over time.
That's first and foremost, no question.
And being one of the, speaking for the young generation as a 24-year-old, if I may add, Yes, definitely we may lack attention span, but we still have the potentiality. We still can do, keep things organized and clean. That's not an archaic skill. So just focusing on that first and foremost is going to really set you up to being successful in the position, because it's a learned behavior. It's a learned skill. It's nothing that's only reduced to a certain amount of people. Through practice, through trial and error, you'll gain skill over time just naturally.
No, that's great. Like we said, there's a ton of people that are listening that will definitely resonate with a lot of the great information, and especially anybody who's aspiring to be in your role or looking to grow from your role to different roles or whatever it might be, just getting started in the industry. Nonetheless, you definitely dropped a lot of information, a lot of good information. And I will say, Coach Mage has said a lot of, you know, me and Mage talk all the time. He said a lot of great things about you. And obviously just talking with you for these 30 some minutes and even before this, believe it or not, a quick conversation, you can learn a lot about somebody, and it definitely shows why you've been able to grow in a program and an industry. So there's some high hopes and some, I shouldn't say hopes, there's some high and big things coming for you in the future, I'm sure. It sounds like it, and it sounds like you're on the right path. Just keep working hard and good work. But thank you very much for hopping on with us. It's great to hear your side.
Yeah, thank you. This is awesome. I love listening to basketball podcasts, including Rising Coaches and other ones. And just, we live in a really cool era right now where learning is at our fingertips and disposal, and being able to hear people's stories, it's really inspiring. And being able to have this conversation with you guys is great. And Coach Major has been awesome, and loved working with him, and excited for the rest of our season this year for USD. And it's been great meeting you, Doug, and hoping to keep in touch with you as well.
Yeah.
With being on here, guys.
No, this was great, PG. Appreciate you, man. Obviously, be seeing you here shortly in a couple of hours.
Yeah.
But now, man, you're a grinder supreme. It's been a blast so far. Thank you for everything you've done for me coming in late September, early October, which is bizarre in this profession. But you've helped make my whole landing and with the fewest bumps as possible. Appreciate you, brother.
Of course, Coach. You're a pro, so. I know how hard that is. I can't even imagine jumping in and trying to understand how everything works. And you've been just awesome. So I'm very fortunate to have been able to cross paths with you at USD. It's been a huge, I haven't really shared it, but it's been really big with my own confidence and professional development as well. So
no, thank you, man.
It's a privilege for sure.
That's great. No, you got one of the best. No question. Been working with the guy for 3 years. You got one of the best. So it's great. But no, and thanks everybody out there too. Thanks for tuning in and listening to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Again, Alan Major, Doug Caputo, all you coaches out there, as we always say, keep working and keep rising. We'll see you all soon. Have a great rest of your season.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.